We are short two members, two seats here apparently, but we will call the meeting to order. This is the Tuesday, February 25th, 2020 Board of Technical Registration meeting. And we'll begin with roll call. Mr. Winter.
Alejandro Angel. Jack Gilmore.
Present.
Neil Jones.
Present.
Jason Foos.
Here.
Clarence McAllister.
Here.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Here.
Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andrew Everode.
Here.
Eugene Montgomery. We have a quorum.
Okay, we'll move on to the call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes pursuant to ARS 38-431-01H. Board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask the staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Is there anyone here that's not signed up on the list or hear about a specific case to speak in the call to the public? I see no hands, gestures, or anything. So, with that, if there's no one here to call to speak in the call to the public, I will close the call to the public at 9:04. We will move on to adoption of the minutes. Item 4A is to approve, modify, or reject the January 28, 2020 board meeting minutes, and I would be looking for a motion.
Chair, I move we accept the January 28, 2020 board meetings for approval.
I'll second that, Chair.
We have a motion and a second. Are there any corrections to the minutes or additions? And I want to hold this item until these gentlemen get seated.
That's carpool.
Traffic.
For the record, Dr. Angel and Mr. Montgomery have taken their seats. We're looking at the January 28th, 2020 board meeting minutes. We have a motion and a second to approve. We're looking for any comments, if anybody has any comments, corrections. And we'll give you 2 a minute if you need to catch up.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to abstain because I wasn't here.
Thank you.
I've read them. They're fine. I'm ready.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes with one abstention.
I'm abstaining. That's why I wasn't here last time.
Thank you. We'll move on to 4B, approve, modify, reject February 11th, 2020 board meeting minutes. Again, looking for a motion and a second.
So moved, moved to approve the minutes from the executive session.
Second.
From February 11th, yes.
We have a motion and a second.
Sorry, can I revise my motion? It's
please
to approve the minutes from this February 11th meeting because there was more action beyond the executive session.
Second.
Abstain.
Thank you. I'll call on the folks that were there to vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes with the abstentions. 4C, approve, modify, reject January 28th, 2020 board meeting executive session minutes.
Board members, I have both executive session minutes from the two meetings. I might pass around for your...
Thank you.
in the middle of the table.
Oh, the emails. I heard about that this week. Yeah.
I get there just as it happens to them. Like 15th and 9.
They put everybody in the shoulder? Or?
Yeah, they put everybody in the shoulder, but it was backing up pretty good. So glad I was in there.
We need a good civil engineer on that issue, please. Someone who knows something or two about highways?
Roads, streets?
We need a lot of those.
Yeah. It's like such a big secret thing. Hmm.
Steve. I wasn't here.
But he didn't read it.
He wasn't here.
Oh.
Yeah, this was from the 28th.
Interesting.
Thanks, Kurt.
Okay, the minutes have been passed around. I'll entertain a motion and a second on this.
Chair, I'll move that we set the minutes for the executive session.
Second. I will abstain.
Thank you, Clarence.
Same here.
Thank you, Dr. Ames. So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion on those? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes with abstentions.
That they're both executive session minutes, so just the same one.
Both.
That was,
both.
Yeah.
Both, yeah. Item 4D is approve, modify, or reject the February 11th, 2020 board meeting executive session minutes. If we haven't voted on those already, I think we need to.
I think that was part of the prior motion.
That we just did.
Okay. All right. So just for clarification then, that was part of the prior motion. So 4C and D were approved. Item 5, we have no cases that we're considering for formal hearing, so we will skip that and move on to item 6. We have several people signed up. We have, and I'll list these off here so we can make some decisions. We have Douglas Spoke signed up for item 6D1, and apparently he's a call-in. We have 6E1 as a call-in, Ayler Halber. Present in the audience is, looks like Ron Manigan for 6A4. Are you present?
Yes.
Okay. And Dennis Rogers for 6A5, is that correct? Okay. So let's start with case 6A4 for Mr. Manigan. Am I saying that correct?
It's Magian.
Magian? Okay. Would you like to come to the table, please? We're on 6A4 here, folks.
Go ahead and have a seat.
Oh.
Okay, item 6A4, brief synopsis of the complaint. On December 10th, 2019, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent, while conducting a home inspection at the above reference address, failed to adhere to the standards of professional practice when he allegedly failed to accurately report on the conditions of the window. Kevin Barber, certified home inspector, 60049, is the respondent in this case, and it's case number HI20019. Is Mr. Barber present? Okay. The investigative conclusions are that the respondent has not violated the board statutes, and that the respondent failed to apply the appropriate technical knowledge and skill while providing professional services in Dewey, Arizona. The board staff recommends the complaint against the respondent be dismissed. Mr. Mangian, this would be your opportunity to address the board if you'd like to.
Yes, certainly I would. My partner and I have been together 32 years. He's a retired court administrator from Phoenix.
person sitting in the back. He's 74 years old, the onsets of dementia. We sold our house in Phoenix so we could go to Prescott in that area and get away from all the stress and everything. We put every penny we had into the house that we bought. We trusted Kevin Barber to come and do a professional inspection of the house. We marked off that he had done the windows. He had checked the windows. Not window, but pearl on his thing there. The windows don't open. You can barely open the sliding windows. They're Anderson windows, and that was one of the reasons we bought the house, because it said Anderson windows in it. But we didn't open the windows or anything when we bought the house. A week after we moved in, Tom was cooking something. He tried to open the kitchen window, and you can barely open it, just barely open it. It was like it was squished together. And in the dining room area, I checked all the windows after that. It took two people to push the windows. Kevin Barber, the inspector, came back several times to the house to try to fix the windows. If he didn't feel like he was responsible for overlooking that, I don't know why he was over there and spending hours with people trying to fix the windows. But in any case, the windows weren't fixable. You can barely open it. He blamed our age. He said he could open it. He's 60-something. And he said it's because of our age that we couldn't open the windows, which really pissed me off. We didn't buy a house to retire in to have some man come and tell us because of our age that we can't open the windows. I tried working with him. I tried working with Anderson Windows, Anderson Renewal. It's not under the home warranty that we got. The windows need to be replaced. We don't feel it should be our responsibility to replace windows. When we bought a house, trusting the inspector to make sure that, if there was a plug that could overlook the wall, that would be one thing. But the windows, and I don't know what else to say, but it really devastated us because we're in a financial bind. Now we're going to try to sell the house so we can move to Susan because of Tom's help. So we can't sell the house because the windows don't open properly. So I don't agree with your decision because why should we be out $12,000 to replace windows if we had known that the windows weren't operating, we wouldn't have bought the house. We trusted Kevin Barber to do that as an inspector, a professional inspection. And we didn't get it.
Thank you, sir. What we have in front of us is two assessments by independent home inspectors, and they've come to the conclusion that Mr. Barber met the standards, the standards that he's supposed to follow for window inspections. That's what we're looking at in front of us, and that's what we see from the technical end of things. So,
I don't understand how that could be, sir. When none of the windows were operable, how could that be a complete inspection?
Mr. Mulligan, but you said Mr. Barber was able to open the windows when he went back to the house.
No.
You said he opened them when he went back couple of times.
No. He had somebody there working with him one time, I don't know from where, but they tried to take one window out. At first they said there's no rollers on it, there needed to be rollers, and they found out that there was a rollerless window. Again, we're not in the window business. We bought a house, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I guess.
It's a costly expense, you know.
I understand, but the windows are not shut inoperable. They're just hard to operate.
did, I wish I could have brought a video of how the windows, how hard it is to open the windows. Yes, you can open them, not completely. You can open them, but it takes a huge effort. Sometimes two people that are elderly, old, I'm not elderly.
And the other thing I wanted to ask you is, have you asked for anybody else to look at the windows that's not renewal by Anderson? And I mean, I'll be frank, my concern with it is that they're in the business of selling windows, so right. They're not going to suggest that they can be fixed, potentially. So.
Well, I haven't had anybody else out because I was waiting for Kevin to, he was making an effort to fix it. So I was waiting to see what he would do, so no, I didn't contact him.
From my perspective, I understand where you're coming from. I think the reason I think the assessors came to the conclusion that they came to is because, one, the inspection report didn't just omit the windows. He said he operated them and was able to open them. Then I think the fact he's shown good faith in going back and working with you through the issues. And the windows are, I understand, difficult to open, but they're not inoperable. So the statute doesn't say that they have to, slide easily or anything else, just that they have to operate. So that's why I think the inspectors came to the conclusion, or the assessors came to the conclusion that they came to.
Sir, if we had known that the windows were like that, number one, we wouldn't have bought the house that way, with the windows that way. We just wouldn't have bought the house with the windows that way. And I'm just kind of befuddled because I honestly, in my mind, I see like as an open and shut case. Checked off that he didn't check for the windows. The windows are barely open, they're able to be open, and we're stuck with a bill to replace windows when we don't have the money, and we're going to lose money on selling our house. We don't think it's fair. This is Tom Brady, not the defense.
And I think the issue that you point out about being fair, that's probably outside of the scope of this board in this case, because we're looking at technical standards on this, and did the inspector meet the technical standards? So we're limited in just looking at that, and the assessments point to him, the inspector, meeting those technical standards, however good or bad or weak or strong they are. So that's where we're at, and that's how we arrived at our place here at the board. Yes, sir.
Can I make a comment?
Please tell us your name for the record.
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady.
I play football. I'm Indiana best basketball. The windows that they're talking about, every window in the house is not movable. He made a statement there that I'm older than he is. I can't do it, but he can. When he opened the window, 2 inches maybe, that's all that could be opened with any of them. The one in the kitchen, I can't open it all. Important to me because I cook a lot, and when things put out something where the alarm goes off, I can't let it go out the window. I can't open any windows. He can't open any windows. When he said he could open them, yeah, I could do it too. About this far, with a lot of work. What started this whole thing was the big double sliding door in the living area was hitting something like it wouldn't open, and they found there was something underneath. They got out of it. It works okay now. I was there for maybe about 5 hours when he was there with the Anderson window guy there, and it, both of them, they finally gave up trying to open, and they removed the window. They found out that back when the windows were made, Anderson was doing something without wheels on the bottom. Mm-hmm. They tried something different, and it didn't work, and they stopped doing it. And wouldn't you know, about 2 years or 3 years ago, was the end of the year, the time that you could have it replaced because of, well, that was before we bought it. But to be honest, when you say open, you can't slide it. If this is the window, you can slide it a couple inches back with a lot of pull. And he never opened one, when, even though he said that in the statement, that he could open it, but I'm not strong enough. That's bullcrap. I'm stronger than he thinks. He's real strong. When you say open window, it's a couple inches. You can't open the window. Now, during the winter, that's no big deal there in the Prescott area, because like this morning, it was what, 34 when we left? Much warmer down here. But when it gets warmer and you want to open the windows, you can't do it. You can't do it in the bedrooms. You can't do it going down the stairway. That one will open now because I've worked on all of them. Maybe that's the one he can open. But they're not open. They have to be replaced. That's $12,000 to $15,000 that we were got. The realtor was just falling apart. She couldn't believe it. They're not usable They're not usable windows. They're beautiful windows. They really are. But you can't use them. You can't open and close them more than a couple inches. Maybe if you're lucky, you can get 3 inches.
Mr. Brady, is it all the windows in the house that don't operate, or some of the windows?
All the windows.
So there's not a single one that...
There is, yes, there is. Yes. There's the window going downstairs at the front of the house in the stairway. That one does open.
Okay.
But it's all the ones on that side of the house.
That's going downstairs to another bedroom, and in the bathroom, and where the laundry is.
In the bedrooms where the windows in the bedroom, both beds are against the wall where the window is. It's about this big or whatever. And it's above the bed. So to open, to open that window, you almost have to move the bed to get leverage, enough leverage to open that window,
I mean, I'm reading the checklist, and
yes,
the qualifier for the window inspection is observe and operate.
I'm sorry, I didn't do
that. I'm reading the inspection checklist, and the verbiage is to observe and operate the window. So I'm looking at then the inspector's report, and he simply indicates inspected. So my question, of course, is I think it would be prudent as part of the overall homeowner's inspection of the windows to assure operation, or at least attest to the operation. It's not shown in the inspection report. However, it is indicated on the assessment checklist as a feature that should have been confirmed. So these gentlemen are arguing, you're arguing operation.
Yes. When you buy a house, I think you assume that you can open and close your windows without...
Well, we assume nothing. I mean, you have to review the inspector's report and determine what the inspector is charged with. What is his scope of inspection? So don't assume anything. There are many aspects of the home that the inspector does not operate. He won't open and close shut-off valves or change states of circuit breaker conditions. So there are certain limitations on a home inspector's scope. But in the case of the windows, I am a little concerned that the checklist seemed to indicate it says observe and report on condition and operation of a representative number.
Right, so he's not supposed to open all the windows, but he should try a few windows
to
and make sure they open.
To see if they open.
Well, and on the checklist, I specifically looked at, like, if there was one, if he checked off that he checked, there was one window, you know, I'd say, well, yeah, it would be that window in the front that does open and close. You know, I'd say, well, that's the window he chose. So. But it says windows, you know, plural on the checklist.
So looking at the, I think it's the Byfield assessment. It's on page 334. The assessor cites the professional standards of practice for home inspectors, revised 11-14-2017. Item number one is observation and description of the observed systems and component. Observe the act of making a visual examination of a system or component and reporting on its condition. Describe, report in writing a system or component by its type or other characteristics to distinguish it from other components used for the same purpose. Item two is explanation of adverse conditions and recommendations for remedies, such as review by qualified professional. Gene, is that along the lines of where you're arriving at with your statements?
I'll speak for Gene because I'm reading the same thing he is, in that the standard is, you know, there's certain things where he's just tasked with observing things and reporting. Mm-hmm. There's other areas, and Windows is one of them, where he's tasked with not just observing and reporting, but operating the Windows. The report, represented a number of them, and the report does not, I mean, the report has one word, that he inspected the Windows. I think I understand what Gene's saying. On the other hand, for you gentlemen, I just want to make sure you understand the scope of the board. We are not a claims court or anything else. We can't award damages or anything of that sort. Our scope is to discipline the respondent if there's an issue with his work.
Well, that's why we're here.
Yeah. So I don't know what would be prudent if, I mean, I can see one is requesting an additional assessment or an opinion from another home inspector as to whether inspect is enough. Another one maybe is to get the, you know, registrant to try to open the windows and get a video of it so we can see, you know, sort of a home inspector can say if that's typical what they would see when doing inspections or not.
Well, I'd focus on something that we're seeing unfold in front of our eyes right here. This report might be insufficient if two engineers can't determine whether or not he met that standard of operating, you know, looking at and then operating. So maybe there's a reporting issue here. Mr. Kramer, yes, okay.
If I may offer, I would offer to go up and look at the windows and maybe get the respondent to meet me there at the same time and walk through the house and check the windows and report back to you guys.
I think that's a nice offer because there's two issues. I mean, one is the reporting violation of not saying operated. That might not be as big a deal. I think the question is, did he actually do it or not? Not did he forget to report it or not, but did he actually do it or not?
Okay. Well, I want to stress the importance of reporting because I see it in land surveying all the time. There's people that do a lot of things out in the field and they don't really tell you what they did, and that's the source of a lot of confusion. So the alledgers here have pretty good, strong reading comprehension when they're looking at words and saying window versus windows. So people read this stuff and they're looking at it. So that's something that sticks out in my head in this case. But the question for this board then, based on what we've just heard, is how do we move forward with the case today?
Well, my other concern is the respondent is not here. So I think it'd be unfair to hear, you know, the alledgers, which have made very good points, but not hear from the respondent. So that's why I think just today judging it on that and just calling it on the reporting issue might be rushing to a conclusion. I think it'd be good to take up Mr. Kramer on the offer and decide from there.
So for the record, the respondent did have notice of this meeting, correct? He was notified of this meeting?
But you and I both know that when you see, or when the respondent sees dismissal on the agenda, he's not as concerned that
Fair
he needs
enough,
to show
but I,
up.
I just want to establish that
yep,
we did.
You're right.
We did notify him. Okay. So, Dr. Angel, do you have a proposal for us or a motion?
I would suggest that we look into the issue further and table the resolution until then. Maybe task Mr. Kramer to or someone else to operate the window and get some video evidence and then ask a home inspector if they think that's typical or not.
So there's several items there. That's kind of packed.
It's not a motion because we're tabling it. I think we need to give staff direction on what to do.
The motion is table and direct staff.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Does anybody want to?
You guys coming here, so thank you for coming here. I know it's a drive.
We didn't think we had a choice because it just didn't seem right, so we just couldn't sit back and let everybody make a decision without our side of the story, too. Mm-hmm. It truly affected us, especially him, because we don't have money on homeowners.
So while we are still in under motion here, does anybody want to offer some direction to staff?
Mr. Kramer, do you think you have what you need?
I've got what I need.
Okay.
I'll call you guys in a reasonable time.
Okay, I'll give you my number.
Andrew?
Say let's vote on it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Thank you, fellas.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Just
make sure to try a few of them.
Oh, I'll try them all.
Okay.
The next person we have to signed up is Dennis Rogers for case 6A5. Mr. Rogers, if you come up.
Which number again, Mr. Chair?
6A5.
Okay.
This is case 685, I'm sorry, agenda item 685, case number P20005. The respondent, Dennis Rogers, registered architect, is present at the table.
For dismissal.
This is for dismissal. Synopsis of the complaint is the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent prepared architectural design plans for the Caliber Club project at 1695 South Santan Village Parkway in Gilbert, Arizona, that failed to meet city codes related to the stair rails and failed to meet ADA requirements for two bathrooms. It is further alleged that the respondent has been unresponsive and thus his delays and lack of professionalism have resulted in additional and unnecessary costs to the client, and this item is up for dismissal. So, Mr. Rogers, this is your opportunity to present anything to the board that you'd like us to hear.
Dennis Rogers is really expecting to see the complainant here, and since he's not here, I defer everything back to the evaluations.
Thank you, sir. Is there any discussion at the table, or are we ready for a motion?
Mr. Chair, just for the record, I do know Mr. Rogers, but I feel impartial on this one.
Okay.
I actually wanted to say, Mr. Rogers, I think did a good job in trying to make things right. You know, he even offered some of his own money. I think hopefully there's a lesson learned on the contract side of things and on the scoping, but I appreciate you trying to resolve things.
Be careful with your clients.
Yeah.
Well, don't take a job that doesn't have construction administration. That's why I will not do that.
Mr. Jones, what? Is that a motion you're offering?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to dismiss this case.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Can we get a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Carmen. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Rogers.
Are you ready for better, Mr. Rogers?
I know. How could you go against Mr. Rogers?
The next person to sign up is Mr. Ferrier for case 683, and I believe we have a call-in on that?
I don't believe so. I have a 61 61.
Okay. And this is, okay, so this is 683. This is another dismissal. Okay, so there's that note. So Mr. Farrier, we'll move on to your case here. Let me get this queued up in my machine here. Okay, this is case number HI-20-022. The respondent is Mr. Farrier, Jason Farrier, Certified Home Inspector 38071. On January 3rd, 2020, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent, while conducting a home inspection at 6815 West Avenida Del Rey in Peoria, Arizona, on or about November 19th, 2019, pulled the dishwasher from the counter without returning it to its original position, removed an air filter without replacing it, and caused damage to the garage door opener keypad. And we had assessments on this, and it went, we're at a point where we're looking at a dismissal. So, Mr. Farrier, I'll open up the table or the floor to you. If there's anything you want to share with the board.
This was settled within a couple of days of this happening. The realtor is the one that put the dishwasher out when she tried to open it. The air conditioning contractor was there during the inspection, and the garage door button, we don't get into codes or anything like that or testing, so I don't even know what they were saying was wrong with it. And this was all from the seller. My client was perfectly happy with my service, and the transaction went through, and they live in the house, so I don't know how it even got this far.
Okay. Anybody have a motion on this one? Questions? Discussion?
Chair, I move we dismiss this complaint.
Second that, Chair.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Farrier.
Thank you.
Okay, so everybody that was present to speak has been addressed and their cases are done. We have two call-ins that we can go on to. So I think that I'll go ahead and proceed to that. The first call-in is for Mr. Doug Folk, and it's agenda item 6D1.
Sorry. Hello, Mr. Folk. This is Kurt Winter at the Arizona Board of Technical Registrations Board meeting. Are you available, sir?
I am. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Folk. This is Jason Foose, the chairman. I will queue up this case real quick and read some details for the record. I thank you for allowing us to call you. This is case... agenda item 6D1, case number P18037. The respondent is Brian Robichaud. He's a non-registrant. His attorney, Mr. Folk, is on the phone. And the synopsis of the complaint is on November 13, 2017. The board received a complaint alleging that the respondent, who owned an architectural firm, was holding himself out as an architect with that firm. The respondent was not registered with the board nor the principal of the firm. The firm is registered with the board. The investigative conclusions were that the respondent has violated board statute AR32-145.2 in that the respondent may have advertised or displayed a device to indicate that he's qualified to practice a board-regulated profession without board registration. The staff recommendation was guidance, and I believe that we're looking at a consent agreement and then a counteroffer or a red line version of that consent agreement. And with that, Mr. Folk, I'll open up the floor to you.
Thank you, Mr. Foose, and thank you, members of the board, for allowing me to call in this morning. I'm appearing on behalf of Brian Robichaud this morning. Mr. Robichaud is gravely ill and in hospital at the moment, so I am doing my best to interpret his desires in this matter and to proceed accordingly. Last week I spoke with Scott Donald, your staff attorney, and Deputy Director Patrice Pritzel to work out some terms that we could recommend to the board for approval. I have agreed on Brian's behalf to the terms of a revised consent agreement, which I believe should be the one in your packet this morning. I think Mr. Kramer could confirm that for you, but I think we've reached agreement on the terms, and if the board was inclined to accept that revision, I would recommend to Brian Robichaud that he sign it and accept it as well. My only challenge at the moment is getting a signature from him. I'm just not sure when and if I'll be able to get a signature because he's very sick.
Mr. Chair, if I may, there is a red line of a consent agreement in the packet. That is not the final version. When Ms. Pritzel and I spoke with Mr. Folk, there were edits to that, which Mr. Kramer is presently copying to hand out to the board members. So there are some edits to the red line version that the board members will be getting momentarily.
Mr. Folk, did you catch all that?
Well, I did, and I can maybe help move things along. If the red line is showing my prior requested changes, the most significant one that was a point of our discussion is in new paragraph 7 in the findings of fact.
Page 977, for the record, page 977 in our packet.
And through our discussions, I had agreed on Mr. Robichaud's behalf to delete the first sentence and the last sentence of the proposed insertion. That met the concerns that the Attorney General's office had and the board had, and I believe the only other edits were very minor. It was just tidying up some grammar. So that was the substantive change, and with that, I'm prepared to recommend that Brian accept and sign this if he's able to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Folk. I have a question for either or both Mr. Donald or Ms. Pritzel. Are you comfortable with those changes? I mean, were those changes satisfactory to you based on your conversations?
Essentially what we had told Mr. Folk is that really we have to leave that to the board members. Several board members had some strong opinions that they expressed at the earlier meeting. So we came to a conclusion, but not necessarily an agreement, because really you need to look at it and see what you feel about it.
Well, with that understanding, I mean, that it's our discretion here, were the things that you talked about reflected in this newest red line version?
Mr. Chair, I believe that the modified paragraph 7 meets what I understood to be the concerns of the board.
Okay.
That said, again, I can't really recommend one way or the other with it as board counsel, as I'm not in prosecutorial stance with regards to this case, as it hasn't progressed that far. But I believe that what I heard enunciated is reflected in this current version of the agreement.
Okay, thank you. And that, I understand that.
And I want to make sure, so the way that paragraph changed is Mr. Robichaud was denying the allegations in our complaint and denying holding himself out as an architect and denying the allegations in the AG agreement. I think in the revised version, he's still denying the allegations in the AG agreement, but he's not denying the allegations in our complaint.
Yes, the Attorney General consent agreement that was entered into was entered into without any admission by Mr. Robichaud. It was entered into on its own terms, essentially for disposition of the case. So there were no admissions specifically in there, and in fact he maintained denials.
Yeah, and whether this is the right consent agreement or not, it's one issue, but I think it would have been a non-starter if he had not, you know, if we had a sentence here that he wasn't admitting fault or in our case. So I appreciate that getting modified. Can I ask a question on to Mr. Falk on the findings of fact, paragraph 3, the board's original consent said that the respondent was not registered with the board as an architect, and you asked that it be modified at the time of the events alleged in the complaint. Is he registered now?
No, Dr. Angel, and my edit to that line was in response to the original language that was struck there, nor the principal of the firm. And, I mean, I could provide more explanation, but I didn't want to get deep into the weeds here today about, you know, what our concerns were with the references to the Attorney General's lawsuit. I will say that my inserted language was intended only to state factually Mr. Robichaud's position. He was the owner of Hunt Caraway Architects at the time. It was legal for him to own that firm, even though he personally is a non-registrant. And the firm had, and as I inserted, he was the president and one of the directors of the firm, and also the firm employed registered architects, including the principal designated on its firm card. Those are all facts. And so I was asking only that these findings reflect the status of that firm at the time of the events alleged in the complaint. And this, again, goes back to an anonymous complaint that concerns events that also were in part the subject of the Attorney General's action, but it wasn't the Attorney General asserting a complaint. And so, in our view, when the board drafted the original consent agreement, it was importing things out of the Attorney General's action that were not in themselves part of this anonymous complaint, which we had previously responded to. So our goal here is just to get to some final language which is truthful, it's honest, it reflects the facts of the situation, and respects the fact that Mr. Robichaud legally owned this architectural firm and served as its president and a director, and that the firm also employed licensed architects who were, in fact, it doesn't say this in the order, but the architects licensed with the state of Arizona were the ones in responsible charge of all architectural services performed by the firm.
I think I'm just going to, personally, I'm focusing on the conclusions of law that he held himself out as an architect when he was not one. So I appreciate the staff working hard with them to figure out this language. It seemed to be kind of what I was concerned about last time in a dismissal, is that there was definitely impact to the public trust and the public procurement. And so I feel comfortable with the conclusions of law being pretty straightforward here.
I agree. I think he's getting fairly light for very egregious actions in my mind, but I'm okay with the consent agreement if that's the fastest way to resolve it, the most efficient way.
Yeah. I think 2,000 is our maximum fine for one occasion. So, unfortunately, I think that's probably where we're going to...
I think, well, we have multiple occasions in which he represented himself to be an architect, I think. You know.
The one time
there's school board,
him,
school
yeah.
board minutes, the CMAR sign-in sheets,
I think
things like
CMAR
that.
I think the CMAR sign-in sheet is the most clear-cut to me. So, the fact that he's no longer practicing or not practicing, if the case may be.
Yeah, I do. I agree. With the biggest thing is the admission that he did it, and put the public in notice that he's not an architect.
Well, what's the effect, Dr. Angel, of item 7 then, when he says that he's not admitting fault or liability?
He's actually admitting fault, or he's not saying he's not admitting fault in our case. he's not admitting fault with a prior agreement he signed with the Attorney General.
So I believe
not for professional registration, not for professional registration, but for other violations, alleged violations. He did not admit fault on those, but he's not contesting our findings here. If you if you're looking at the computer, but if you look at the actual language that ended up on what was passed around, Jason.
I just had a little trouble sorting that out, but I think your explanation works for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that was under findings of fact number 5. It talks about a separate Attorney General's investigation and the allegations in that. He's denying those allegations, but not ours.
Because his settlement denied. Thank you for Mr. Donaldson working with him on this.
So, Mr. Chair, I'll move that we offer the consent agreement and order of discipline that was circulated at today's meeting.
And if not signed, 30 days?
And if not signed within 30 days, move to formal hearing.
I'll second that.
Okay, I just have one comment. It was announced that this person might have health issues that would be sort of restrictive to a signature or maybe be problematic. Is 30 days okay with everybody?
To sign?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think that's the reason. Yeah.
So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Folk. Right. Thank you, Mr. Donald.
Mr. Foose and members of the board, thank you again for the time that you've spent on this matter. You've been very patient as we work through these issues. I also appreciate the time and care that Mr. Kramer and Ms. Pritzel and Mr. Donald put in working with me on this. I will commit to the board that I'm going to try and get it signed if Brian Robichaux is able to do so. And if not, I will make contact with Mr. Kramer again within this 30-day time period that you set. I honestly have never had a situation like this before where I have a client that's in intensive care and I'm supposed to get a signature. So this is new territory for me, and if I have some other issue that where I can't get Brian to sign it, I will report back to the board at that time. I have no doubt he would sign it if he's able to do so. It's just a health issue right now that I have to contend with.
Mr. Folk, he doesn't have a power of attorney or anybody helping guide him?
Well, yeah, I understand that there is, but I haven't seen it, and that gets into other issues that are outside my area of responsibility. So I will do my best to get it signed, and as I said, I feel comfortable that Brian will sign it if he's physically able to do so. So I'm taking the board's 30-day time period as a directive. And if his health does not permit him to sign it within that time, I'll figure out something that we can do, because we all want to get this resolved. The board does. I know Brian did. I certainly would like to get it wrapped up. So we'll do our best to get this done for you. And again, I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Folk.
Thank you.
All right. Bye, Mr. Folk.
Okay, that concludes 6D1. We'll move on to the next call-in, which is 6E1.
Which one?
6E1.
6E1.
And the call-in is Oller Halber. Echo.
Great.
One lamp.
Is there a time for the call or just...
No, it just says...
So you voicemail and said that you wanted to talk to the board and you were available and gave you that number, which is the number I already had.
So I try again later? Try again later?
Yeah.
Okay, so we will set this case aside momentarily. That's it for the sign-ins according to the list. Is there anyone here that's signed in for a disciplinary case hearing or an enforcement hearing? Okay, I don't see anybody else. So now we can move on to back up to 6A. And if there's anything that anyone wishes to consent, I'd accept any proposals on that. I note that we're going to have to pull 6A1 because I have to recuse myself.
Doesn't mean we got to pull it.
I'm sorry. We can't consent it.
So we've got to take A1 and A2 separately. Those are the only two left there.
Mr. Chair, can I move that we dismiss 6A? Well, if he's recusing, can I ask him?
Somebody else have to run the meeting? Who's the vice chair here?
Okay. Jack, you're up.
Mr. Vice Chair, I move that we dismiss...
He's got to get up the table.
6A.
Sorry.
1, no. As soon as our chair scoots.
Come on, Jason, get some extra stuff.
Thank you.
I'll do it. Approved.
So there's a motion. Is there
yes.
There's a motion.
Yes.
To dismiss A1.
6A1.
In a second?
Neil.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? So vote.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ayes have it. No nays. Thank you. Passes. Dismissed.
Nice work.
Good work.
6A2.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to... consent
case H120-0176682. Consent that.
Which one is that?
682.
Consent it. What?
Consent or
dismiss.
Okay. I'll second that, Chair. Okay, so we have a motion to consent and dismiss 682. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Case dismissed. Consented and dismissed. 6B1, letter of concern.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we issue a letter of concern, although I'd like to add a little language to it, reminding the registrant to not... or to stick with facts and not conjectures, because he was, you know, making assumptions about foundations and other things in the home. So, just basically be what we decided, to do a letter of concern regarding the conditions of electrical system compatibility, insulation, garage fire separation, but then also remind them to please report in facts and not speculation.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Up next, we have 6C1. Okay, so in case 6C1, this is case number P20007.
We gave the seal away.
Synopsis of the complaint: on July 30th, 2019, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent's architectural and engineering design plans for a commercial tenant improvement project on 1044 North Cape Creek Road in Phoenix were rejected at intake by the City of Phoenix for incorrect formatting and lack of sufficient detail, and that the respondent failed to address his plans, deficiencies, and provide his professional services in accordance with the contract he had with his client. It is further alleged that the respondent firm engaged in the practice of engineering without firm registration with the board. Board records show that the respondent firm was not registered with the board between February 29, 2012 and May 29, 2019. And investigative conclusions are that the respondent has violated Board Statute 32128C3 in that the respondent aided and abetted an unregistered person by allowing the respondent's seal to be used by a non-registrant. This investigation also concludes that the respondent firm may have practiced or offered to practice a board-regulated profession without board registration. The recommendation is accept the respondent's signed consent agreement encompassing a letter of reprimand, state suspension, probation, professional ethics class, administrative penalty in the amount of $2,250, cost of investigation in the amount of $197. The board staff also recommends that a case be opened against David Schwinghammer, non-registrant, and 3DD/Third Dimensions Design LLC, a non-registrant firm. And I will open that up for discussion.
I'm glad we have a signed consent.
Yeah.
It's disheartening when people bring stuff to us just to get attention from the other person and then suggest we drop it, if that doesn't make the allegation go away. Just for the record, that's disheartening. But I'm glad we have a consent agreement, so I move we accept it.
Yeah. I second that.
So we have a motion and a second.
I have a question.
Discussion.
On the use of electronic seals. I guess I'm dating myself, but you know, seals had ordinarily, whether electronic or manual, normally had required a wet signature. Now I assume we can use electronic signatures. So in addition to using the seal, he would have had to have forged his electronic signature?
Yeah, that'd
be easier.
Well, he probably gave him the seal and the signature.
Yeah, it's
all together.
It's all
usually in one JPEG.
Yeah.
That's okay. What it looks like.
That's what it looks like?
Yeah.
He took his signature and his seal.
Yeah, it looks like he just emailed it to him, already signed.
Okay. The thing changes, though, is the date. So it's not like you have a copy that you just put on place and you have to change the date.
Yeah.
True.
And the date can be in text.
A text edition?
Yeah. Our Revit auto updates the date. Huh? So you got to kind of keep your eyes on it.
Yeah. What's our electrical engineer think?
Good one.
Thank you.
Electrical.
I had one question for Orlean. It looks like the contract in the end was signed with the engineering firm, but from what I understand, it was the draftsman or the designer who was initially contacted for the work and sort of coordinating the contract.
Correct.
Is there any investigation against the drafter or no?
That's what my request is, to open a complaint.
That's probably
which
the
is
motion.
David.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not there.
I have a question of staff. I don't see anything in here that indicates there were assessments or an EAC.
He admitted to the that he gave the seal to the individual.
Okay.
It just was.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.
So we do want to look into Mr.
Open.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to 6B2, case P20013. And this is Jeremy Leipel?
Yes.
Is he present? No? Okay. Oh, that was Mr. Kramer there. I'm sorry. Okay, so this is case P20013, Jeremy Leipel, PE, Civil 47509. Synopsis of the complaint. On August 23rd, 2019, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent failed to deliver an unusable set of residential design plans to the client on the Monroe Residential Project in Williams, Arizona, and abandoned the project after being paid. It was also noted that the respondent firm was not registered at the time of the Monroe Project, and the investigative conclusion is that the board has violated, or the respondent has violated statute ARS 32128C4 as it relates to ACR 43301-17, in that the respondent accepted a professional engagement outside of his professional registered category while lacking the qualifications, technical knowledge, or experience to perform the engagement. And the investigation concludes that the respondent has violated ARS 32128C2 in that the respondent engaged in gross negligence, incompetence, or other misconduct while providing professional services to the public. This investigation concludes that the respondent has violated ARS 32141 in that the respondent firm practiced or offered to practice a board-regulated profession without board registration. The respondent demonstrated a good level of cooperation throughout the investigation and has displayed a willingness to comply with the board's practice act. Staff recommendation is a letter of reprimand, probation of registration, administrative penalty in $850, cost of investigation in the amount of $750, and we have a signed consent agreement. Doesn't look like, again, there was any EAC or assessments done here. I'll open it up for discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just start. The concern that I had here was, of course, that the result of the investigation is a finding of gross negligence on the part of the professional civil engineer, and that he was incapable of practicing in areas outside of his profession, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, whatever, in the preparation of these designs for the client. He didn't show any boundaries in accepting that scope of work. I believe he should be charged with an ethics course or an understanding that you have an ethical responsibility with what you're selling to your client in terms of your scope, skills, and expertise, and he failed that.
I actually was noting the exact same thing. I do know we have a signed consent agreement, so I don't know if an alternative would be to issue a letter of concern in addition to the consent, reminding him to not practice outside his area of expertise. That doesn't take care of the course, but at least it reminds him that that's an issue and that he should stick with civil engineering. Because he did architectural stuff here that he didn't know.
Well, with all due respect, that would be what the letter of reprimand would say.
With all due respect?
Yes. You know I respect you greatly.
That sounds good to me.
That language would be included in the letter of reprimand.
Right.
Okay. So just a clarification, I think that I misspoke and said that there was not assessments in an EAC. There were assessments in an EAC, so just for the record, I am aware of that. So we have assigned a consent agreement. To me, the numbers seem low, but we have a signed consent agreement, so I think we're there.
I think we need to make an explicit statement to stay within your scope of practice. You can't take on a contract.
That'll be in the letter of reprimand.
That'll be in the letter of reprimand? Mm-hmm.
We could amend it to instruct staff to make sure that's included in the letter of reprimand? Sure.
Okay.
But
all
if
right.
you wanted to raise the fine, then you would have to reject the consent. And the same, if you wanted to send it to an ethics class, we would have to offer him a different consent.
Yeah, all right. But at least in the letter of reprimand, you will explicitly remind him of his ethical responsibility to accept work within his area of discipline.
Yes.
And that any violation should be a violation of his probation?
Yes.
With all due respect.
All due respect.
And with all due respect. Mr. Farland is pointing out that the conclusion of the law specifically states the concern that he was practicing outside his skill level.
I think that's important in case it comes up again. So,
so we're looking for a motion.
Does that get you there?
Yeah, that gets me there.
Chair, I make a motion that we accept the signed consent agreement.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.
Stay in your lane.
Okay, we can bounce back to 6E1, which is our phone-in, I believe.
You still have F1 too, yeah.
Let's go ahead and try 6E1. If we can catch him, we'll do it. If not, we'll move on to F1.
They're related.
Canada?
It's Canada, but it works.
Phone lines.
I wouldn't know that country.
Snowstorm.
Yeah, Canada's a one.
It's also one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tried 9-1, 9-1 and then the number.
9-1.
Or, you know, 9 to get out or whatever just to get out. That's one.
We got further that time though. Touch somebody.
Well, it has been the board's practice if you try to call somebody and you can't reach them, you move ahead. Can proceed.
We've talked to him before on the phone, right?
Yeah.
Everybody?
I have, yes.
I recommend, I mean, since if we're looking at potentially as a denial of registration, right? A renewal? It is?
No, this is a forward to formal hearing.
Oh.
Combined with the previous case.
Okay.
Go to formal hearing. Oh.
And then we'll get a hold of them then? I think I can move on.
Did I hear a motion?
I move that we send this matter to formal hearing, considering that we were unable to contact the people involved.
Second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Can I ask for discussion? Oh, Mr. Chair?
Sorry, yes, please do.
With all due respect. Mm-hmm. Just kidding. I don't know, Mr. Kramer, is there anything new we should know from your conversations with Mr. Haldner?
No, not on this case.
Okay.
This one was pretty simple.
So he wanted to talk to the board, but there hasn't been anything new.
Right, I sent him an invite, as we do for all of them, and since he's out of state, I sent the form for the procedure for phoning in. Okay. And he left me a voicemail a couple days ago and said he would be available and wanted to speak to the board and call at this number.
Mr. Donald.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, the motion and the second before the hearing is for the bases as stated in the staff investigation report provided in the board packet. Is that correct?
That's the way I understood it. To combine and forward, right?
To combine and forward to formal hearing.
That would be for potential violations then of ARS 32128C4 as it relates to AACR 433011. And ARS 32145-5, which would regard the application, and then that would also be combined with P19023, which would be for formal hearing for violations as stated in the investigation report regarding that case. Would that be correct?
Yes, sir.
Just to make sure I understand.
That was my understanding too. Thank you, Mr. Donald. So we have a motion and a second. We've had some discussion. Is there any further discussion? Mr. Winter, is everything okay there?
I just wanted to make sure I got the case that it's being combined with correctly.
Okay.
19023.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. We will move on to 6F1.
Mr. Chair, should we, I know there's a point in the agenda where Mr. Donald wrote a memo on summary suspensions. Should we have him present that before we decide on this case, since that's what's on the table potentially?
That's a wonderful suggestion, Dr. Alejandro. Right. Mr. Donald, I'll open the floor up to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, there's a memo provided to the board with regards to summary suspension in general and the board's ability to pursue summary suspensions. I don't necessarily want to labor the point, so I'd be happy to answer any questions regarding it. The key would be, though, with regards to any summary suspension, that the board have to understand this is, while it is a tool in their toolbox, is something that is designed for extraordinary situations. Because a professional license is something that a registrant has a property interest in. And the process for taking disciplinary action in regards to that license is set up to comply with due process and provide the person the opportunity to be heard at every stage before the board does remove that license. In a summary suspension situation, the board is dispensing the due process to a degree in order to immediately take a license. In order to do that, as I outlined in the memo, there are very specific criteria that the board has to be careful to make sure are met, specifically having to do with an evaluation that there is an identifiable threat to the public in not taking it away. And also that the underlying issue that you're acting against is something that constitutes a violation of board statutes and rules. So you have to have something that somebody's done that you can discipline for, and you have to be able to enunciate on the record why you need to immediately take away their license without them having the ability to present their case to a trier of fact. I get into it again in more depth in the memo, as well as specific factors the board is going to consider anytime you're considering a summary suspension. And I will just highlight the specific factors that the board might want to consider. Examples of these would be the passage of time since the alleged violation, and is this an immediate issue, whether the registrant is really able to practice, the existence or non-existence of any consumer complaints, and the nature of the specific alleged violation. Again, we consider that violation if there is something that would constitute a violation of board statutes and rules. So that's really the thumbnail sketch, and I'd be happy to answer any questions with regards to summary suspension.
Mr. Donald, can you articulate the process for a regular suspension as opposed to a summary suspension?
Certainly. A regular suspension, the board would, based upon an EAC or investigator report, would determine that a case should proceed to a complaint notice of hearing for suspension. That case would then go to either the board or to the Office of Administrative Hearings, where a hearing would be put on. At the conclusion of that hearing, it depends on which track is taken. If it goes to the board, if the hearing is to the board, then state will present, the registrant will have the opportunity to respond, there will be exhibits and witnesses, the board would then make a decision and would determine findings of fact, conclusions of law, and would then immediately determine an appropriate penalty. And at that point, the registrant would have normal appeal rights from that. If it proceeded to the Office of Administrative Hearings, it would be the same procedural presentation to that court, But then that decision, the judge would have 20 days to make a decision and issue it in writing. That would come to the board. The board would review that at their next scheduled meeting and then would approve, reject, or modify that decision. So sending it to OA, you'd be adding potentially another 50 to 60 days on to before you proceed with suspension.
And if the board takes it, it's more like 60 days so that we can, you know, file all the paperwork, give all the notices, and schedule the hearing?
Yes, but the complaint notice of hearing would have to be drafted and then would have to be properly served upon the registrant, depending upon the complexity of the case, or in some circumstances, it's a very cut and dried case. So it would depend on the nature of the underlying case.
Thank you.
One further point, even in the event of a summary suspension, there still does have to be a hearing before the judge, ultimately. If the board were to summarily suspend someone today, for example, I would immediately want to get in a notice with the Office of Administrative Hearings because we would want to have a hearing as quickly as possible in order to then determine whether or not to continue with the suspension or revocation or other discrimination. But the hearing would be for that underlying violation. So if there's not a violation of board statutes and rules, as I mentioned in the memo, the board can't do anything preemptively. The board can't say, we think this person isn't mentally stable, so we're going to protect the public by taking away their license. The board has no authority to do that.
Anything else for Mr. Donald on that topic? Okay, we are looking at case 6F1, or agenda item 6F1, case number P20-028, Paul Stover, registered architect, number 35136, and the action is proposed summary of suspension of registration. Thank you, Mr. Donald. Does that appeal to anybody at this point?
It does to me.
Okay.
I'd like to move for an executive session for legal advice.
Okay. We have a second.
Second, Mr. Chair.
We have a motion and a second to go to executive session for legal advice on case P20-028. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.